Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Amazon.com. Yes, you can buy books, but you can also buy perfume, beach towels, vacuum cleaners, grills, greenhouses, and lobster dinner for two. My guest today, Amazon founder and chief Jeff Bezos, is the man and the mind behind the Amazon empire. The one-time boy genius out of Texas and Florida who once made a list of things you could sell on the web and now sells them all. And he's not finished. He wants to change the way you read with his new e-reader, the Kindle. He wants to change the way we use the internet. This hour on Point, Amazon.com founder and chief Jeff Bezos on the future of reading, e-commerce, the economy, and the internet. Joining me from Seattle is Jeff Bezos. He was born in New Mexico, grew up in Texas and Florida, was summa cum laude in computer science guy at Princeton, worked on Wall Street, and then road tripped from New York to Seattle to start with a lot of what a lot of investors thought was a crazy business, selling books online. Amazon.com launched in 1995, first turned a profit in 2001, and has changed the way we browse and shop and read. In 1999, he was Time Person of the Year, the king of cyber commerce, they called him, saying, Jeff Bezos has done more than construct an online mall. He's helped to build the foundation of our future. Jeff Bezos, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. There's so much we want to ask you about. I've got one of your Kindles right here on the studio table with me. But let me just go back to that Time magazine thing for a bit. 1999, there you were on the cover, Person of the Year. And they wrote at the top, and you know, we might laugh about this now, but they wrote, some argue, this is 1999, some argue the world has entered a long boom, a kind of economic speed loop where the centrifugal force spins off nothing but wealth and happiness. What about that view, Jeff Bezos? Are we in a time of nothing but wealth and happiness?
I think the people who if you go look at the world just a year later, you know, you probably had a pretty different view.
Sorrow and woe in a burst internet bubble.
Precisely so.
So, but seriously, there were enormous hopes for the internet, and I want to talk very specifically about what Amazon.com is up to, but also very large today. And this idea that the internet was going to bring some kind of, you know, heaven on earth, of democracy, of frictionless commerce, of the kind of diffusion of ideas, the magnification of human thought, human genius. Now here we are, you know, going on 10 years later. How do you see the web, the internet unfolding? How much is it delivering, and where is it run into kinks and its great promise?
Well, I think some of those things are happening. I mean, it magnifies any kind of new communications technology, kind of helps magnify humans, I think. And so we get all of us, the genius and the warts, they all come through magnified, and you see that on the internet if you browse around the internet. But you know, one of the great things about the internet, and I believe this is all goodness, is that it increases the transparency, the kind of perfection of information. It shifts the balance of power toward consumers, toward readers. You know, everybody can be a publisher on the internet. I think that's a good thing. You have bloggers who are breaking major news stories every day. I think that's pretty cool. In the world of e-commerce, our view on this is that with every passing year and every passing decade, customers are going to be more and more empowered with better information, and so they'll be able to quickly check prices at multiple stores. They'll know whether they're being overcharged for something. They'll know about the quality of every product. You know, and Amazon customer reviews do that. We see now customer reviews are a big influence on purchases at Amazon. And so we had a waffle iron in the store that had negative customer reviews, and the manufacturer of that waffle iron actually changed the waffle iron. And, you know, you're getting those
feedback loops. The triumph of the web. A waffle iron has changed.
One little step at a time, the world can get better with this kind of transparency. So I am a big believer in that. Now, I think companies that fight that trend are going to find they're on the losing side of that battle. It used to be, in the old world, maybe successful companies could put 30% of their energy into making great products and services and 70% of their energy into shouting about those products,
marketing,
and services,
right? Yeah.
Advertising, mm-hmm. marketing, and that I believe that we're seeing that flip around, where successful companies put most of their energy and effort and sweat into building great products and services, and a much lower fraction into shouting about them. You know, the internet is a word of mouth accelerator, and so if you do have a great product or service, people do find out about it.
Is there anything you don't sell at Amazon now? I buy books there once in a while. I get email from you. I got one yesterday, you know, saying, hey, you know, great deals for the whole family. And you've got chainsaws and patio grills and, you know, automotive stuff and pet supplies and groceries and gourmet steaks. Is what are the boundaries? Is there anything you don't sell there now?
There are very few boundaries. You know, I'll give you an example. We sell so many shoes on Amazon.com. If you had told me 10 years ago how many shoes we would be selling in the year 2008, I'd have had you immediately institutionalized. This is so it really has changed over time. I mean, shoes has done so well for us that we even opened a focused website on it called endless.com. But it's really I think there is almost nothing that can't be sold online in one way or another. Sometimes it'll be a little different. Products that are very difficult for us are things that are inexpensive items, but that are bulky or heavy or very hard to ship. Things like a common yard rake. Mm-hmm. You know, it's an inexpensive item, but very
tough
difficult
shape.
To.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's bulky. Mm-hmm. Things like that don't work very well online.
Let me ask you about the economics of all this. You're selling all this stuff. You're talking about shoes. Now, you know, everybody knows at a shoe store, you sit down, you try them on, you send them back, you get another pair, a little bigger, a little smaller. That's a lot of back and forth. Even if it's not shoes, everything you sell, you have to ship. How do the economics, and everyone's talking about this these days, but the economics of high gas prices, high diesel, high oil, how do those play out in distance commerce, which I guess you are. You're not the corner store. I know you've got a lot of warehouses around the world, but still, you have to ship everything. So how does it work when oil's over the moon?
Well, first of all, that's a great question. And it's one that, if you look at it system-wide, I think one of the reasons that you're seeing our business do well in these recent times with very high gasoline prices is that it's very expensive to go pick up your own products at the store. When you start thinking about how expensive it is, you know, it's not efficient either for your family budget or for the world.
But what's the difference if I drive to, you know, Barnes & Noble's or UPS drives to me with Amazon on board?
Well, when you're driving yourself, you're taking a 2,000-pound car to pick up 5 pounds of stuff. And that's very inefficient. There have been a bunch of academic studies on this, and one of the things that you find with, you know, we use the U.S. Postal Service and UPS for most of our deliveries in the United States, and they go on highly optimized routes where they stop at many houses on the route, and it's a totally different. It's kind of like taking a bus instead of driving your own car. When you have a bunch of packages on board the bus or the UPS truck, and you drive an optimized route, it turns out you save a ton of energy. And so the relative cost advantage when gasoline prices and fuel prices are high is it's actually advantageous for e-commerce. It's good for the environment as well.
But chart that on out, Jeff Bezos. What if oil does go? Goldman Sachs says $200 a barrel. Maybe it goes even higher. Is there a point at which your business model falls apart because energy is just too expensive?
No, I don't think so. For us, again, because we are inherently more efficient users of fuel than the alternative system, higher energy prices probably don't hurt our business. In business, sometimes people misunderstand this, but absolute costs are not as important as relative costs because, you know, in business, you need to be more efficient than your competitors That's the standard. It's not, you don't have to be more efficient in absolute terms. You have to be more efficient. So as long as fuel prices go up for everyone, that is, you know, that's kind of a, in that kind of level playing field environment, we do just fine. But the key point, I think, is that from a consumer's point of view, we offer free Super Saver shipping, so we're not charging for shipping. We have Amazon Prime where we charge, you know, a flat. It's kind of an all-you-can-eat buffet. You get two-day shipping, unlimited two-day shipping for free if you buy a $79 membership.
Sounds like marketing now.
I can't help it. It's congenital. It's a very important point, too, that we are taking on, you know, we are taking on the job because of our free shipping and Amazon Prime. We're taking on the job of insulating people from those fuel price increases. And that's our problem to figure out. It's not our customer's problem.
You must be feeling pretty good these days. I mean, it wasn't always a great success story. There were times when the magazine covers said, you know, Amazon.com, Amazon.bomb, Amazon.toast. Business Week said that you had gone from .com pinup to .com pinata after the after the internet bust.
And I think that's very true.
Oh, well, a little comeback trail and a sweet one, no doubt, for Jeff Bezos. There's a lot more we want to ask you about. I've got one of these Kindles on the tabletop here. We're talking with Amazon.com founder and chief, Jeff Bezos, about life and books and e-commerce and the internet. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking with Amazon.com founder and chief, Jeff Bezos, today about life and books and e-commerce and the internet. Jeff Bezos, sorry to josh you about your laugh, but it's a famous one. I guess when you're a billionaire, you can laugh any way you want, and why not? Braying and honking laugh, the magazine pieces all say.
I've had this laugh since I was a child. There was a time when my brother and sister wouldn't go to the movie theater with me. It was too embarrassing.
Since you were a child, I've got a picture of you off the web. Of course, it means we can see everything. I've got a picture of you. You look about 6 years old, maybe seven. You're holding two, are they goats or dogs or something? Looks like a Texas, a humble home behind you.
That's right. Those are my grandfather's dogs. They were named Bonnie and Clyde.
You've got a cowboy hat on. Is that your granddad behind? I don't know if you know this picture. These two black, big black dogs.
I think I know the picture you're talking about. Yeah. I'm not totally sure. But, yeah, I think that is my grandfather.
Cowboy boots and short pants. It's a long way from there. You were summa cum laude.
That's always a good look.
Yeah, it's hot in San Francisco, I think. Were you a boy genius? Was that your reputation?
Oh, my goodness. Well, in my mother's eyes, of course.
Okay. But... Yeah, but you did all right. I mean, were you a nerd? I mean, in the best sense of the word.
I was a nerd. I was. You know, I was very, very fortunate. My elementary school years in Houston, and in fourth grade, in a time when kids never had access to computers, I had access to, there was a local Houston company that had extra time on their mainframe computer, and they donated some of it to our elementary school. We had a teletype, one of these, you know, ancient devices.
Oh, yeah, I remember. We're talking here in what, the late 60s, early 70s, something like that?
Yeah, that would have been, early 70s.
Okay.
And you would dial up the phone and it was an acoustic modem. You'd actually take the phone handset and physically couple it, you know, put it into the teletype.
With the sort of rubber ears there, you'd suction it down.
Exactly.
I remember those in the big funky keys, one by one. Yep.
You got it. And we would, you know, me and a couple other kids would stay after school, and we taught ourselves how to program that computer. We did that for a while until we figured out that it was pre-programmed on the mainframe to play a crude Star Trek game, what we would think of as a crude Star Trek game today. Once we discovered that, of course, we never programmed the computer again. We just played Star Trek.
You went off, studied computer science and electrical engineering in college. Your biological dad had moved out of the picture very early on. Your stepfather, an immigrant from Cuba, was an engineer in the oil business. Have I got that right, in Houston?
That's exactly right.
An immigrant from Cuba, I think, came penniless.
That's
and
right.
Did okay.
Yep, he came to this country when he was 15, all by himself, and really pulled himself up by his bootstraps.
And your mother's side, Texas ranchers for a long time. Still have a big ranch down there. Maybe you do too now.
That's right. I have a ranch down there that is the kind of the home base for Blue Origin, which is this suborbital. The company that's building a suborbital space vehicle, and that West Texas Ranch is the place where Blue Origin launches its rockets.
That's pretty cool. We'll talk about it. But I want to talk about this Kindle for a minute first. I've got one in my hands. A lot of people may never have seen it. This is a kind of, you call it an e-reader or e-reading device. It's about the size of a paperback book. And I can read books on here. I can buy and download them. I can read the newspaper on here. I can read blogs on here. I can go online. I can shop on here. I have to say, I'm a very tactile guy. I was always very skeptical that I would ever want to read on something like this. But yeah, I was playing around with it last night. It's working okay. You just rolled this out late last year. How's it going?
It's going amazingly well so far. We are, you know, we're extremely grateful for the early response that we've gotten. We've had trouble initially keeping them in stock. We have scrambled to increase our manufacturing capacity and got them back in stock. It's already, there are 130,000 different books that you can buy on the Kindle, and they all get wirelessly downloaded in less than 60 seconds from wherever you happen to be. So you don't, it's not a Wi-Fi device. It uses a advanced, the same kind of wireless radio that you use in advanced cell phones. So it works from anywhere. We hide all that complexity from you, so there's no monthly wireless bill, none of that.
Right. Find the book you want, and down it comes. And then it's, I talked with a 14-year-old girl this morning, daughter of a colleague, who has read 30 books on her Kindle. Yes, mom's credit card lets me buy the book, she said, but 30 books, and she loves it. She said her only concern is when if she gets near water by the pool, she's always afraid it's going to turn into an electronic smoking heap of junk. What happens if what happens if cousin Billy throws a big wave over this thing?
Well, that's certainly a we will have to make a waterproof version one day.
does the book publishing industry completely hate
Although
your guts
now? Although
I
have used mine in the bathtub, but I'm careful not to drop it in.
Yeah, no doubt. But do the book people just hate you completely now? I mean, you've sort of trampled in the bookstore world with Amazon.com, and now you're going after the book itself, the physical item. Do they see you as some kind of maybe one day a savior, or just as, a Visigoth trampling all the stuff they love?
First of all, what we're trying to do here, we recognize is very ambitious. It is, if you look at the physical book, it has basically unchanged for 500 years ever since Gutenberg. Printing technology has improved dramatically, but the physical book itself, that artifact, it would be Gutenberg would recognize it and know how to use it and say, oh, it hasn't changed that much.
But that speaks pretty well for that artifact, right?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. Anything that has resisted change for 500 years is not going to be easily improved upon.
Mm-hmm.
And, 3.5 years ago, when we started designing the Kindle, we had that fact uppermost in our mind that that this was, in a sense, a very audacious project. We thought that given where we were with technology and the kinds of things we had available, the electronic ink display, which for people who have never seen an electronic ink display, they always do a double take. It's readable in bright sunlight. It's very crisp. It doesn't cause any eye strain. It's nothing
an
ordinary computer display. Mm. That technology, together with modern wireless technology, we thought would allow us to build a device that could capture the essential element of a book, which is that the book gets out of the way and disappears. When you're in the middle of reading something that you're enjoying, mm-hmm. you're not thinking about the ink and the paper and the stitching and the binding. You're thinking about the story. You get lost in the author's world. Mm. And that was the essential thing we needed to replicate. But then if you're going to try to improve on the book, you have to do some things. You can never outbook the book. You can't mm-hmm. try to replicate every feature. So you have to try and do some things that are better. And the big one that we found for Kindle is this idea that right from the device, you don't need a computer. You don't have to connect your Kindle with a USB cable to mm-hmm. a computer or anything mm-hmm. like that. You can think of a new book and have it in less than 60 seconds. And people, when they first try that feature, are really startled. If you're trying to improve something, over time, if it's successful, and I think this is going to happen, whether, we certainly don't have any sinecure to be the agents of this change. If if it turns out over I think this will happen whether we're the ones who make ebooks successful or whether somebody else does it.
Yeah.
It isn't going to be the case that for all time, you know, books are printed on trees and distributed the way they are today. Things do change.
Things change. 500 years is a long stretch, but maybe we're in the midst of that change right now. Jeff Bezos, founder and CEO and chairman of Amazon.com, is with us, and we have a lot of listeners who want to speak with you. Jeff, let me go to Chuck in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Chuck, you're on the air with Jeff Bezos.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Great show. I just want to ask, I'm a self-publishing author, and I was wondering if this device is something that might level the playing field for someone like me, who doesn't get his book published in a big major hardcover edition, but perhaps could be downloaded.
So you're self-published in the sense that you haven't been published by a big publisher, but could what? Could the Kindle and Amazon what do what for you?
Could they help democratize, I don't know how to say that, the process, and for authors that, where people could just download the book, which is a much less expensive proposition for a publishing company. Could Amazon have a section, for example, dedicated to people who want to have their books downloaded for this device?
Sounds like a great idea. Sounds like a Bezos idea. Jeff Bezos, you cut out the bookstore. Are you going to cut out the publisher as well and have self-publishing straight to the Kindle?
Well, we're working with all of the publishers, big ones and small ones, and they have been very supportive of the device. For self-published authors, we do have a self-service platform for Kindle. It's called the Digital Text Platform. And they can come in and format the book for Kindle and submit the book for Kindle all by themselves. It's a very simple process. They can set set the price that they want to sell it for, and it goes into the Kindle store automatically, and anybody who has a Kindle can buy that the digital version of the self-published book.
And it's already there, so Chuck could go to Amazon.com today
today. He should go in and look for what's called the digital text platform.
Wow, Chuck, check it out. What about the cost here? A hardback book, easily $20, $25, $30. What do they cost on Kindle, and what does that do to the economics of book publishing?
Most books on Kindle are $9.99, even when they're still in hardcover, in physical form and being sold for, $25 in the hardcover form. And this is one of the things that was really important to us 3 years ago when we were working on Kindle, that we knew that people wanted and believed, and I think rightly, that electronic books need to be cheaper than paper books. For one thing, people correctly assume that there are many fewer costs involved in producing an electronic book than there are in producing a physical book, and so the books should be cheaper. And because there's so much cost reduction, at that kind of $9.99 price point, there's still enough dollars there for to satisfy the publisher and the author, and make sure that everybody still gets a reasonable amount of money out of that transaction.
Are you sure about that? I'm reading that you're selling it for less than they're selling it to you. That you're kind of subsidizing Kindle at this point in Amazon.
Well, I'm sure that's true for some titles. It's not true all in.
Mm-hmm.
So, one of the things that retailers do is they often, they call it, product mix. But there are always some products that we're selling at a loss. This is true of physical books as well.
Right.
There are always some products that we're selling at a loss, and there are other products where we're making money. That's a very traditional thing to do.
All in. Watch for that. Let's take a call from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Windwalker. Windwalker, you sound like a typical New Age guy. What do you know?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Jeff, I've been an Amazon customer since 1995, and my 9-year-old son and I both love our Kindles. And just a word to Chuck, I want to thank you for everything, is that Amazon's doing to level the playing field for independent authors and small publishers. I saw you on Charlie Rose back in November, and I was really impressed by the intensity of your commitment to the Kindle.
All right,
thank
you.
Not just a product. I had written about Amazon before, and so I made an on-the-spot decision to begin a new book project, and it eventually became two books. And as I completed individual chapters, I began making them available as Kindle excerpts, and over 20,000 Kindle owners have downloaded them.
Wow,
it's been an amazing experience, and no trees have lost their lives, or no gas has been used in fulfilling those 20,000 orders. So I think it really is a new age product, and I think it has tremendous potential for as a green product. It's funny. The one thing that surprises me about the Kindle Jet is that it doesn't sync up with the rest of the Amazon store, given that Kindle owners tend to skew towards early adopters, gadget heads, and people of means. It seems like a missed opportunity. I'm just wondering if that's like, if you're trying not to overdo it commercially, or is that an engineering issue?
Let us put the question to Seattle and the CEO. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. What do you say, Jeff Bezos? Can you hitch it up more fully?
It's an engineering issue. Those are the kinds of things we're working on. We want complete integration between, Kindle on the Kindle, the device, and Amazon.com, the website. In some places, we have it today, but we probably don't have it everywhere. So you do find Kindle edition books when you're on Amazon.com, the website. You can buy books from the device, or you can buy books from the website, and they still get automatically. It's kind of a cool experience. If you go to the Amazon.com website and buy a Kindle book, it automatically gets wirelessly sent to your Kindle. So you can kind of go from your living room computer and go pick up your Kindle in your bedroom, and by the time you get there, the book is already on your Kindle, even though you bought it from the website. I wanted to pick up on one thing that the questioner said, which I really appreciated, which is we do think of Kindle as more than a product. We do actually, and the team is very motivated by this, we think of ourselves as missionaries. And I believe that missionaries build better products than people who are just trying to build a product.
But a missionary for what? Is it a literary mission? Is it a political mission? You used the phrase, I think, democratizing. Is it an economic mission? I mean, you cut out the publisher. You have self-publishing. That's cool. That's very democratic. Old-time publishers might say, but where's the gatekeeper? Where's the quality control?
For us, the mission is making long-form reading better. So if you think about the last 20 years, many of the devices that we humans have created and very, very successfully so, I would call them information snacking devices. They are not great for long-form reading. I mean, I like my BlackBerry. It makes me more productive, but I don't want to read a 300-page book on it. And the same thing with, reading blog postings and so on. There are a lot of great things about that. But a lot of what we've been working on over the last 20 years, and I believe that we humans co-evolve with our tools. So we change our tools and our tools change us, and that cycle repeats. And so to us, in a certain sense, we are what we eat with respect to our tools. And Kindle has the potential to reduce the friction, to make it easier for people to do more long-form reading. And we get lots of reports from Kindle owners that is happening, that now that they have a Kindle, whereas they might have read their email on the bus on the way to work, now they're reading books on the bus.
I got it straight from a 14-year-old, 30 books on a Kindle so far. But, of course, every advance has its price. Here's a story in the Economist business section. Publishers worry as new technologies transform their industry. There's a big picture of you holding your Kindle, and the headline they put under it is, to publishers, "You're all doomed," from Jeff Bezos. Your big smile on your face. You're all doomed. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Amazon.com founder and CEO and chairman Jeff Bezos about life and books and e-commerce and the internet. Maybe his $8 billion net worth, they say in the media these days. It wasn't always that way. He's thinking about reading, about how our tools shape the way we evolve, about getting into space and subspace, maybe off his ranch in Texas. Abigail's calling from Somerville, Massachusetts. Abigail, you're on the air with Jeff Bezos.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling. I happen to work for one of the last few remaining independent bookstores.
Are you doomed?
Yeah, it seems to be the case. I mean, we're toiling away, but Amazon is certainly not helping us any. So my comment is to ask Mr. Bezos what he sees in the independent bookstore, in any bookstore at all. Does he see it as just something that needs to be phased out? Does he have any values or hold it in any kind of esteem or regard, or is it just something that needs to be replaced with the mini-mart, the Walmart that is Amazon?
Jeff Bezos?
Well, you know, I have a fondness, I think, like many of us do. We grew up reading books. Books are emotional objects for us. And I think for many people, myself included, bookstores are emotional places for us. It's not the same as an ordinary store. You know, it's not people love to browse bookstores. Nobody loves to browse the drugstore. You know, it's a different thing. You don't go to the drugstore and say, I think I'll browse the Preparation H aisle today. You know, it's just not.
Probably not. But, you know, we also, saw this New Yorker magazine cover just a couple of weeks ago, of course, and it's got the picture. It looks like a street scene in New York. It's a drawing. And there's a little guy, this guy opening up his little bookstore, independent bookstore, maybe like Abigail's, and right next door is a woman. There's the UPS guy in brown and the Amazon.com box, and she's getting, obviously, her books from Amazon.com, and they're staring at each other. How does this face-off end? Is Abigail's shop doomed as you continue to move forward?
I don't think so, but I think that things do have to evolve. And so, you know, some of the successful independent booksellers are moving more into having not just selling new books, but also selling out of print books, used books, and they sometimes supplement their in-store sales with sales on the internet. So they actually use the internet as a tool for their own success.
Are you softening the blow? You're just talking in a nice way and you're kind, but I mean, do you really? We've seen a lot of bookstores go down already. Do you really, really think that it economically will continue to make sense? You know,
I think for bookstores that that adapt and change, as most things do, have to adapt and change mm-hmm. over time. You know, I think it can. I really do.
Change
I think,
into I, what? Like a tactile experience? Should we pay by the hour to go into bookstores and feel the books?
I don't think so. I think people are quite happy to go into bookstores and they like the environment. I mean, why do mm-hmm. we pay? You know. $3 for a cup of coffee at a nice coffee shop. I think part of the reason we do that is because we like to get out. We're gregarious animals. You know, people predicted forever that, I think television was going to put the movies out of business. Well, television didn't put the movies out of business because people don't just do things for convenience. Convenience is important to people. And Amazon certainly excels in that dimension. But it is not the only thing that we value. If we did, we would never go to the movie theater. That's not that convenient. We'd always just, you know, watch it at home.
Yeah, of course.
So there are things that people will pay for that are more of an experience.
An experience at the bookstore. You'd better make it that. Abigail, thanks for calling. Chris in Columbia, South Carolina. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Huh? Jeff, how y'all doing?
Very well. What do you know, Chris?
I got to be real quick here because I'm about to run in and take a test, but I want to say that as a almost 30-something grad student, I've always purchased all of my textbooks and everything from Amazon, and they've always had, you know, great prices compared to, you know, the gouging at the school bookstore. And only recently have I started buying electronic stuff, equipment,
yeah.
Computer peripherals and whatnot from Amazon. And I want to say that the customer reviews that are on there are pretty much what drive my decision on what to buy. And that's becoming more of an important factor.
Do you pitch back in yourself, Chris, after you buy it? Do you make your own comments and stick them up on Amazon?
I do. You've got to carry that on. So I always go back and write a review about the product and make sure that other people who are looking at the same product as I am have a fairly good idea of, you know, what it's capable of, what it's
right.
supposed to do, and whether or not it's worthwhile.
Right. Good. Chris, good luck on your test. There's Amazon as more than just a place to buy, but a place to share ideas. Jeff Bezos, what about the big retailing picture here? Again, you've got everything for sale. You got chainsaws and eyeliner and you name it. Where do you see on the big retailing picture? You talked about how you're more efficient than driving down to the store. We're headed into a dear energy time at high energy prices. Do you see more retailing going away? Will it end up, you know, Amazon versus Walmart deathmatch?
I don't know about that. I think you're going to see retailing has always been a highly fragmented industry. You know, even the largest retailers in the world, and they have many tens of billions of dollars in sales, still have sort of, you know, single digit market share percentages. These retail markets are huge, and there are literally thousands of retailers. And my view, and I think there's a lot of evidence to support this view, is that there are going to be a lot of winners. And it's not the case that this is a winner. Retailing is not a winner-take-all sort of business. People pursue different strategies. They focus in on different customer
segments. You're blurring the e-retail-retail line there, and I'm kind of asking to keep it there for a minute. What happens to stores?
Physical stores?
Yeah. I mean, do you see fewer and fewer of them in this century as maybe energy is more expensive and, I don't know, efficiency to new customers, younger people, they don't necessarily have any resistance to buying online. Do shopping centers go away?
Well, we still see, from what we can see, physical stores are thriving. So even in what people claim are, seem to believe is a weaker economy, for the most part, we haven't seen that. There are always stores that are not executing well. There are some big chains out there right now that are having trouble, but it's, I don't think it's the general malaise. I think it's just that there are missteps made every day by companies. Over time, they accumulate, and it puts pressure on those companies.
What about all the economic grim news we're reading about these days? You know, 84% of Americans think the country's on the wrong track. Housing, subprime meltdown, finance problems, all the rest. There's lots of concern on the economic front. You came up in the 90s, boom time, lived through one bust. But what do you see more broadly on the economy now? Do you see good times ahead? Are you basing your Amazon projections on good times or tough times in this country and globally?
Well, you know, we believe that for our business is growing. You can look at our results over the last several quarters. Our business is very healthy and growing, and I don't know what our business would be like in a healthier economy. I mean, but from what we can see, it doesn't appear that that the rain clouds are as bad as people forecast.
Speaking of rain clouds, why are you going into space? What's your interest there? Is it just because you can, or is this your recreation, the billionaire's toy, or what?
It's a childhood passion. You know, I've been fascinated by space ever since I was 5 years old. You don't choose your passions choose you. And something I've always wanted to do, it's a great team of engineers at Blue Origin. They're building a vertical takeoff, vertical landing. So it takes off like a normal rocket, but it's reusable, and it comes back and lands on its tail like a Buck Rogers rocket.
Vertical landing sounds scary, though. I mean, vertical takeoff we like, but vertical landing sounds like an arrow in the dirt. It slowly comes down like a moon landing?
Yes. Exactly right.
Wow.
That's a perfect example of vertical landing is the lunar landing.
What are you going to do with this? Just vacation with your family or take people up? is it a business? The suborbital space flight?
It's a business. And the long-term vision is, over time, through lots of practice, to make access to space less and less expensive over time. Because right now, going into space is extraordinarily expensive. I think there are only five or six private citizens that have ever gone into space, and they each paid, $20, $25 million to do it. So the idea is to, one step at a time. Blue Origin's motto is gradatum ferociter, which means step by step ferociously. And we want to just slowly but surely try to reduce those costs and make it so that anybody who's interested can go into space.
Gradatum ferociter. I love it. Are you still on schedule for 2010? Get your tickets now. Go into suborbital space with Jeff Bezos. 2010.
We'll have to wait and see. We're building our second development vehicle now. I know there'll be at least one more development vehicle after that. We already flew our first development vehicle, And then whether there'll be a fourth development vehicle or whether we'll be able to go to a commercial vehicle at that point, we don't know yet.
I'm being rude, keeping listeners waiting. Let's turn to Harry in Burlington, Vermont. Harry, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing? Hi, Jeff.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a question for Jeff. I'm a cartoonist and a cover artist for The New Yorker, and I'm also a children's book artist. I've published a few New York Times bestsellers. My
Great.
Question for Jeff is this. I love the Kindle. I just got it, and I think it's fantastic. It's a great green product. It seems like a no-brainer in terms of the impact that it's going to have on the environment, eliminating all the paper and the fuel costs to transport books back and forth to the booksellers. I think independents are in trouble, but I think they should be open to this, and they should not fear it. And so they should look to the big, larger picture of the green issue. The second question for Jeff is about technology.
Mm.
I love picture books. It's what I do. But I also love graphic novels and comics. Is Amazon working on some form of the Kindle that is going to enable users to get color and images on the Kindle as well? Because right now it's great for books, but I'm wondering, God, I'd love to see a graphic novel on this.
Right, and not so many images. And if you get the newspaper, and there are many newspapers you can download here as well, far fewer photos. What about the image future with the Kindle, Jeff Bezos?
Yeah, this is absolutely something that we're trying to figure out how to do. It's a great question. The this electronic ink display right now is only available in in monochrome, black and white. It's four shades of gray. They're in the lab. There is color electronic ink. The advantage of electronic ink over a traditional kind of color computer display, traditional color computer displays, the ones you'd be accustomed to on a cell phone or on a laptop, for example, they're backlit, and those backlit displays cause eye strain over time. So if you read for long periods of time, your eyes get tired, and that breaks you out of the flow of the reading, which is why we use this electronic ink display. It works in bright sunlight. It doesn't cause that. The color versions of electronic ink are in the lab, but unfortunately, they are several years away from being commercially, kind of ready for real commercial use. So we're working on that, and we're working on it with a number of different companies, and we want to be able to do that as soon as we can figure out how to do it, because we do think there are a lot of uses for color in graphic novels, et cetera.
And Harry's doing it himself. Harry, it sounds like your day will come. Hang in there. Let's go to Nashville, Tennessee, and Tabitha. Tabitha, you're on the air with Jeff Bezos.
Hello, Mr. Bezos. I would just like to begin. My name is Tabitha, and I attend Martin Luther King Magnet School, and I'm also the vice president of Emerge, and our goal is to integrate the Amazon Kindle into our school system, beginning with our school, Martin Luther King, to integrate the Amazon Kindle and to replace our textbooks. And that's what we're
How old are you, Tabitha?
15.
And why do you want to merge your textbooks on? Why do you want to get them onto the Kindle, an e-reader?
Well, the main reason is our textbooks, we have 5, 6, 10-pound textbooks. That's easily 40, 50 pounds in our backpack. We did a research where we weighed people's backpacks and weighed themselves, and we did a body-to-backpack ratio.
Yes.
And doctors recommend no more than 10 to 15% of your body weight on your backpack.
Yeah.
So if you weigh 100 pounds, you shouldn't have more than a 10 to 15-pound backpack, and that's just not possible at our school.
Wow.
And we deemed this very feasible. And that's what we've been trying to do.
That's great, Tabitha. Jeff Bezos, you hear it. They want it. They need it. What about textbooks and the Kindle?
We think that's a fantastic opportunity for exactly the reason that Tabitha points out, which is that every student in the world has, this huge, 30-pound backpack full of textbooks. It's true of college students as well. And there's a real opportunity to simplify that, have it be all in one place. Sometimes even perhaps you look a little bit to the future and you wouldn't have to buy the whole textbook. Sometimes teachers assign, 3 or 4 chapters from a textbook. They don't assign the whole textbook.
But so your Kindle is $359. That's surely a hurdle in a lot of schools, I would think.
Well, textbooks aren't cheap. I don't know, if you look at that, believe me, You don't have to buy very many textbooks. They are very, very expensive.
We didn't even get to cloud computing, and we've just got a minute left. You're making computer services available over the internet for is it just businesses now and or individuals in the future? I mean, is it how far beyond books are you planning to go? Books, patio grills, outer space.
The cloud computing thing is fascinating. This is you're talking about what we call Amazon Web Services, and just very briefly, since we're running out of time, people can use Amazon's compute infrastructure inside our data centers, our servers. It's called Elastic Compute Cloud and the Simple Storage Service. And that team at Amazon has done a great job of building something that software engineers and developers, that's the customer set for this. Right now, everybody builds their own data center. It's like the old days when, if you know, 100 years ago, when if you needed electric power, everybody had to generate their own electric power. There was no electric grid. And today, you can buy compute off the kind of as a utility from Amazon.
A computing grid, and you're still in Seattle. You're going to stay there, Texas guy, Florida guy. Is Seattle it forever for Amazon?
I'll tell you, I love Seattle, and it's a postcard perfect day today.
We'll enjoy it from a distance. Jeff Bezos, founder and CEO of Amazon.com. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.